The Clinton administration cut off aid to the Indonesian military and suspended training contacts because of the human rights abuses committed by the TNI. Many of the abuses that concerned the administration took place in East Timor, another disputed province of Indonesia, where the TNI sought unsuccessfully in 1999 to prevent a separatist-minded population from voting for independence in a United Nations-sponsored referendum. East Timor's history and status under international law made it a special case. GAM's independence drive in Aceh enjoyed none of the same UN-sanctioned legitimacy. Isolated and embittered after losing East Timor, the TNI's commanders redoubled their focus on suppressing the rebellion in Aceh. Mobil still paid the salaries of TNI soldiers and officers deployed to protect its fields, despite the official American sanctions over human rights abuses. Legally, Mobil was a subsidiary partner of the Indonesian state oil company in Aceh, and the security payments were one of its contractual commitments. Agus Wijaya, a serving Indonesian general at the time, recalled that his colleagues in the military's high command felt confusion and ambivalence about Aceh's rebellion as democracy took hold in their country. Indonesia seemed fragile and beset by centrifugal forces. The generals regarded themselves as the last guardians of national integrity. In 2000, Indonesian security forces were responsible for numerous instances of, at times, indiscriminate shooting of civilians, torture, rape, beatings, and other abuse, and arbitrary detention in Aceh and elsewhere, the U.S. State Department reported. Army forces, police, and GAM members committed numerous extrajudicial killings. The U.S. Embassy in Jakarta did not regard Mobil as culpable, however. Its diplomats accepted the corporation's account of itself. The companies are unable to control military/police actions, including the use of equipment that may result in human rights abuses, a cable to Washington reported. Mobil faces this dilemma in Aceh. Private, formally organized, profit-making companies had been waging war independent of their home country governments since at least the days of the East India Company and the colonization of the Americas in the 18th century. The idea that such corporations had a legal or moral duty to refrain from facilitating organized violence in their areas of operations was more recent. During the 19th century, Quaker ethical movements and anti-slavery campaigners in the United States and Great Britain, among other places, presaged the ideas that were lumped, toward the end of the 20th century, under the rubric of corporate social responsibility. The 1970s brought an expansion of popular and political campaigns to codify corporate conduct for the sake of the public interest. By 2001, reports of human rights abuses carried out by indigenous military forces protecting oil and gas operations in Colombia and Nigeria, as well as the questions raised about Mobil's complicity in Aceh's violence, had given birth to a formal compact, the Voluntary Principles on Security and Human Rights, sponsored by the Clinton administration and Tony Blair's Labour Party-led government in Great Britain. The compact, as its title indicated, was not binding. It advocated that oil companies undertake human rights risk assessments when they worked in violence-prone regions, communicate their human rights values to host armies that protected their facilities, avoid working with individuals credibly implicated in human rights abuses, and permit the use of force only when strictly necessary and to an extent proportional to the threat. The companies should also, to the extent reasonable, monitor the use of equipment provided by the company and to investigate properly situations in which such equipment is used in an inappropriate manner. The language suggested a corporate version of the rules of engagement guidance typically issued by the White House to the Pentagon in wartime. Chevron, Shell, British Petroleum, Conoco, and a number of mining companies signed the agreement. Lee Raymond refused. Exxon just didn't see the relevance to them, recalled Arvind Ganeshan, a Human Rights Watch lawyer who participated in the negotiations. They just disengaged. There was some skepticism among the corporation's decision-makers about whether the initiative would outlast the expiring Clinton administration, and in any event, ExxonMobil did not habitually join political compacts initiated by outsiders. It wrote its own rules worldwide. ExxonMobil's place in the Aceh conflict created obvious legal and reputational risks that adherence to the voluntary principles could help reduce, but the corporation seemed complacent that it could handle those risks. Particularly during the first Bush term, ExxonMobil displayed unilateralism in its foreign and security policies. "We don't sign on to other people's principles," an executive later explained. The corporation said it would monitor the accord, perhaps to reevaluate later. ExxonMobil's security team was aware of the TNI's human rights record. Internal corporate documents from the period immediately before and after the merger show. An ExxonMobil email acknowledged, "The poor reputation of the Indonesian military, especially in the area of respecting human rights and in their predilection for rogue, clandestine operations." Another internal report found that the Indonesian soldiers around the Aceh gas fields were undisciplined, lacked professional deportment, and were not in any state of readiness. As a third internal assessment put it, "Local security forces are ineffectual and often present as great a threat as the activists. The military presence is a double-edged sword, with some military personnel acting as information brokers, thieves, extortionists, and intimidators." There was no evidence that the ExxonMobil's security advisors encouraged or participated in TNI's torture and extrajudicial killing in Aceh. Exactly how the corporation handled from day to day its knowledge that such human rights abuses were taking place is not clear. Because of the Indonesian military's political power and the sensitivities surrounding the conflict, neither Indonesia's government nor independent human rights investigators could interview or examine the records of TNI units that worked in partnership with ExxonMobil or, before it, Mobil Oil. Evidence trails faded as the years passed.